6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for a pre-draft report on the offseason of the Cleveland Browns, joined by our friend Jake Burns. Jake, how you doing?
Ken, I'm great. Thanks for having me, man. I always love to connect on these, and I know you came over to my show, and I always return the favor. We always do for each other. The good stuff is right before the draft. It's always just, no matter how old I get, I just remember being a kid, man, writing it down on a notepad. Back when the draft was a single day, I do miss the single day version for some reason. Maybe I'm alone on that theory, but I'm excited about it, man. Good to talk.
The NFL gets it as what an event it has become. It is the football new year for most people, and really appreciate you joining us anyway. So let's talk a little bit about the changes in the Cleveland Browns this offseason. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one of the big changes is a quarterback. Talk about how the Browns are moving forward and where they made big changes.
Yeah, they are in a crossroads at a couple spots, which I'll try to illuminate for you. So they're in a weird position, Ken, of trying to, like, we have a good core and we want to compete, but we also know we're missing some elements that really matter. And so they're in this sort of crossroads at a couple positions, like you said. So the quarterback thing got weird. It's been weird for years. I mean, to remind your folks, like, we haven't been involved in the first round since 21. So it's a welcome thing to be involved in the Thursday night again. Maybe not as excited to be a second pick, because that's not where you want to be. But it is good to be back in the first round to see your team improve. They've just missed so many. You know, you need those first round picks. You need the youth inflection in your in your roster. And so it's good to be back in that regard. But the quarterback stuff is obviously the leadoff. Like you said, they dealt with Watson tearing his Achilles and tried to see if Jameis Winston could, like, they gave him a real runway last year. Like, if you play well and show us you can be a competent turnover, reel the turnovers in, continue to maybe drive the football, just play within the means, that they would have thought there was another year or two relationship to be had there. But Jameis was himself. I mean, just, it's the same guy. It's always been a step forward, a couple steps back, just careless throws and bad moments. There's always some good, there's always some tight window throws. There's always some fun. But just not enough to feel like, okay, that's our bridge to the next location. Right. So you start to feel like in the offseason you get a second or like a re-rupture of the Achilles for Watson. So, like, I had written him off anyway, but that's like signing everything away. Now it's just wait until they can officially spread the cap hit over a couple of years. And that probably happens next offseason. We'll see. It could get a little more strange, and maybe they wait another year if the whole thing is, like, it depends on how Watson's camp handles it. But nonetheless, that is done. So it's really just figuring out the next plan. They traded a fifth round pick for Kenny Pickett. I personally did not prefer to go that route because I know who Kenny Pickett is. Sure, he started some ball games in the NFL, and sure, he's seen some moments. But if I'm the Browns, every asset I'm using at quarterback is about finding somebody who is potentially the answer, even if it meant trading for Joe Milton, because you don't know what it is, right? You know, I understand Kenny's basement is a little higher, but you don't know. Maybe Milton figures it out. Maybe there's something there that clicks. Or the same for Malik Willis, another kid, the backup for the Packers now, that I was interested in, like, throwing a late round pick at. Let's see if the, like, every, basically my theory, Ken, has been everybody involved in the quarterback room, I want to have an opportunity here for them to be the long-term answer. And they've gone a different route. They went the picket route to try to raise some of the baseline. Then they just recently signed Flacco to kind of, again, kind of reassure themselves that they got a couple warm bodies that can navigate some of what they want to do, kind of reverting. Because last year was a bit more leaning into Ken Dorsey and Deshaun Watson's, you know, preferences for offensive structure, kind of pushing it back in the world of and we'll deal with this more in late leading up to the season, but more of what Kevin traditionally likes to do. So that's a different type of quarterback this year. We will see what the draft brings, but I know we're kind of side eyeing those guys, but that quarterback stuff's the biggest thing. And then, you know, they don't really have a plan at running back right now. I know it's a great time because there's a lot of really ridiculous talent in this draft. So they do not have anything in works with Nick Chubb right now. There are ways in which the Browns can be advantageous to take advantage of his service time in the NFL and their connection to him and pay him more than anybody, but not have it count against the cap so heavily.
Yep.
So there's a world in which I do think these two get back together, but I do think the Browns want to be patient and see what the draft brings them and then go from there. So that's a spot. There's go ahead, Ken. I know I can ramble.
I just want to say with regard to that, you're talking about a veteran benefit contract where I think it's called that, where that's what they gave, the Ravens gave to Patrick Ricard. They actually gave him all of their money, but you can split it up to two players. So there's an opportunity to do that. So Chubb could make, if memory serves, he could make about $3 million and a little bit and have it count only the minimum against the cap.
Correct. Yeah. And that's the benefit. Nick can make some real money. And the Browns get to save themselves from committing, you know, every cap dollar with their structure right now is so incredibly vital. So, yeah, there is a world in which that I do think that comes together. I do. So we'll see. But I do think they're going through the draft to see what that shakes out to look like. But to kind of wrap up offensively, they feel OK about their wide receivers, but they're definitely open to one. I think the Travis Hunter thing, which we can dive into or we cannot, but they're going to take him. It just feels like they're going to. And I mean, I think that he is a chance to be a transcendent wide receiver. That's how I view him, with an ability to step on the field and play specific packages at the cornerback position or whatever, kind of like he's got the ability to step into the slot. He can play outside. He can do a little bit of everything there. And Jim Schwartz's defense is really custom fit to sort of what you would like a guy who doesn't spend all of his time there to be doing, at least at corner.
Would you expect the Browns to use him more at wide receiver than at corner? Because, I mean, all the talk, and in fact, on our draft boards and everything, we have him, we rated him at corner. He's the number one guy. I mean, you know, so.
Right. The Browns have talked about this. Andrew Berry has said we view him as a wide receiver, and I view him as a, but they're not, they're also very open to playing him. But I mean, listen, they're, like you called it the Liars Conference the other day, or the Lions Luncheon. I love that. That's what they're like. He went so far as to talk about him without saying the word, like, he's not here yet. Like, he didn't say the word yet, but, like, the questions were so heavily on Travis that it turned into, like, he's not here, guys. Like, we didn't pick him yet, and he didn't say yet. Like, it was just kind of funny how the verbiage turned there. But, I mean, there's a lot to lay out, Ken. They need to – there's so much about how that works, preparation, durability – there's just a lot of things to work through there. And especially as he ages to being maybe like what's the paint the picture for a 3 contract player? Is he's 30 years old. What is he doing as a 30-year-old? Like, there's just, when you take a guy at second, you are timelining all of this out. That's such a big investment that you are looking at. How does this work for a decade? And I think that there's a lot to converse about there. I just want to get into the, like, I need them to pick him. There is a world in which they could take Abdul Carter. I don't think it's going to happen, but the Hunter thing is, going to be a very interesting dynamic. But the wide receiver group is sort of settled. They need to add a tight end, certainly need to draft one. They've been ignoring it for years, and their depth behind David Njoku has been a problem, but they want to get back into the world of using more of those guys. So tight end will be focused, and they are interested in a young tackle. I mean, they have Jack Conklin on another one-year restructured deal, and they brought in a depth player there, a tackle, and they think DeJuan Jones still has a chance despite a couple straight years of losing him to season-ending injuries, but the offensive line will get some attention. But it's an offense draft, Kent. They are looking to spend a lot of capital on offense while maybe looking at a safety at some. They have some extra. They have an extra third round pick, and then they could work, maneuver, and maybe come up with another pick in that top 100 range. But they definitely have to address safety. It's some spot in there as well too. Otherwise, defensively, it's in a decent spot. But I think this draft leans, we need to reshape and get youthful on offense, and there's a lot of opportunity to do it for them.
All right. So you mentioned trying to improve the tight end position. I ask this as a question rather than just stated it, make it as a statement. The Browns wouldn't have room for a Mark Andrews on their roster as they're currently structured, right? Or would they? It has about $7 million under contract.
Yeah, I think they could make it work. It's just a matter of, let me rephrase it this way, Ken. I think if they go through this draft and they took a lot of visits with some talented tight ends, they had Elijah Royo from Miami, who they're very connected to. Mason great. Taylor was in the building at his top 30. Terrence Ferguson was in the building as a top 30 from Oregon. But if they go through it and pass through it and don't come away with any of those guys, I wouldn't put it past them. I really wouldn't put it past them. So I think that door hypothetically could be open. I mean, it's again, do the Ravens want to ship him into the division somewhere like that? But I think they'll take the highest bid at that point. We would see. But I do think they want to get in a world where they're running more 12 personnel, because the ability to live in more 12 personnel for them probably fits best with kind of like managing some of the snaps for Travis and kind of keeping Cedric Tillman and Jerry Jeudy involved and like making all that work and mesh together. So I do think there's a world in which they would be very interested in the right tight end if he's available too. But I think, again, if they go in and they find that they're like sitting at 67 and they love Arroyo and they can't pass on him, or Taylor somehow finds his way, I don't think he will, but somebody like that, they've just been kind of ignored. They drafted Harrison Bryan a few years back. I think actually, ironically, I think the 21 draft, I'm losing my mind a little, but that's the last tight end they've drafted. They have not gone into that world. They've dipped into the Jordan Akins, like the veteran, more pass catching veterans behind David, and hasn't bore much fruit. They need to get into a role where they find a guy that means something behind David or parallel to him.
All right. So I think the Ravens' ideal spot to deal Andrews is going to be on draft night, because the thing they need to do is open up a spot to draft a tight end if they are able, because they need to unstack the contracts at that position. All four expire at the end of 25, as I think we discussed.
Let me throw this back to you. Is there a world where you guys, I know that you have some young investments in that secondary, but like a Greg Newsom would come up? Now, he is on the fifth year, which is a little spicier, but he was really actually pretty strong as an outside corner his first year. They shifted him inside because they found Martin Emerson a little diamond in the rough, and he cannot play inside. And it's basically been Newsom's been a slot for them. But man, I'm telling you, I'd be interested from some team's perspective of like, can we get this guy back outside in the right system and see if there's this piece there that has been kind of missing for him? So I was just curious if you think that's maybe a crossover mesh.
So the Browns are in a very tough cap position, obviously, and the Ravens are as well. And they're looking through the couch cushions, as Eric DaCosta talks about it, to find the few dollars. They haven't mortgaged their future the way the Eagles or the Browns have in terms of void years in particular. Yep. So that's something that I don't think the Ravens want to go down that route. I think they'd rather draft. They have a number of picks. You know, they're going to see what they get out of this draft. And, you know, a lot of teams, you know, it's hard to make a trade this time of year because everybody wants to see who they can get in the draft, and they think that's a potential solution. It's obviously much cheaper if they get their guy than it will be via trade. But the interesting thing to me would be if you get to round four, say, and you don't have one of the tight ends that you were hoping to get, maybe the Browns pick goes for Andrews at that point, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You find a package of picks that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they'd be interested in that call. Andrew Berry did talk about, you know, they don't necessarily go into the draft trading their own guys or like that idea is in play, but when opportunities present themselves, they shipped out Troy Hill a few years ago, a slot corner. They sent off to LA. They sent him back to LA, who he had signed from. So yeah, they're always kind of poking around the pro scouting departments around and ready for any of those conversations.
All right. So other draft things you want to talk about before we talk about a couple of hypotheticals?
No, I think that's kind of it. I mean, well, the big thing for them is like they have four premium picks. I don't want them to take a running back too early, but I think that where the Browns draft gets interesting is what they're doing at 33 for your listeners. Like the Hunter thing feels about as set in stone as the Cam Ward thing at one. So then it turns into like, are you sitting still at 33 and taking any quarterback between the three there? Shador, you know, I guess Jackson Dart's now not going to the draft, or you know, or Jalen Milroe, right? And I have an opinion on it.
Jackson opted out of the draft?
He did. I just saw that today. He decided to not go to the draft. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? But yeah, there's other names that kind of float loosely. The Tyler Shuck thing happens here and there, but I don't have any reason to take that very seriously. So it's a matter of like at 33 or moving up, which I know we're going to talk about, is like, what are they most interested in doing? So yeah, that 33 spot is the most interesting spot for them.
So there'll be some more pressure on Shadur to be drafted by either the Saints or the Steelers, I would think, based on where they are. I don't know who else is really, really looking at that level other than the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, as far as in front of, there's been some loose LA, the Rams stuff here about maybe looking for somebody to kind of take over at some point and be patient, very plan-based thing behind Stafford. But I think they want to still compete. They're going to use that pick in a more meaningful way for them. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it turns into like, if he gets past Oakland, Las Vegas, and then kind of gets to New Orleans and there's nothing there with New Orleans. And then the Steelers stuff doesn't, I talked to some Steelers people, they don't think it's happening. So it can get very interesting about a team. Again, whether that's the Giants take Abdul and move up, it's really Browns Giants. And that's really what every mock national mocks, you know, draft creation type has been doing for these guys, is moving them up. But, you know, I've got an opinion on it. If you want to hear my opinion on it, which is like, you know, for my money, I had Shador as a late first round grade. I would be fine with them taking him. But I don't want that. The Browns are technically the most draft capital in the draft. They have an extra third from the Amari Cooper trade. They did give up a fifth rounder, like I said, for the Pickett situation, but like they don't have as much as the data tells you, because they only, like, let me phrase it this way. Inside of the top 104, they only have in one additional pick. So like, I think that them shipping off when they haven't had these premium picks for so long, shipping off a serious pick, maybe going 33 and 67 to move into 24, whatever that looks like for a team to slide back 8, 9, 10 picks. That's where it's like, man, they have so many places that need players of youth, but not just youth, but meaningful youth, meaningful talent, that it does get really dicey there. Now, again, if you're moving up for a quarterback that solves your problems for the next decade and a half, like, no one cares, right? You look back, you laugh about that. But the risk reward of it is interesting to me because, like you said, Ken, there's not a lot of teams.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
At the end of the first, I'm just of the belief that I'm sitting still at 33 and seeing how it falls for me. Because I don't think there's a giant separator in any of those three guys. And if it's me personally, and I'm watching your guys in Baltimore with the unicorn at quarterback, I'm watching Joe Burrow, who's this diagnose and slice you up quarterback. I need in the AFC to chase something. And I'm drawn to Jalen Milroe. I do think it's an interesting dynamic where a guy who I think his passing, the stuff with Jalen is sort of, I think people brush it aside because of the inability to be consistent throw of the football. It's hard to go from what Tommy was doing to what Kalen DeBoer does and have that be a seamless transition. And what I would like to do, man, is I think there's some things mechanically he's cleaning up. I think there's some tempo things on throws I would like to see him get cleaned up a little bit too. But I like taking risks on high characters. He's a high character, high leadership guy who players are drawn to, which I know sounds very familiar to you. Mm-hmm. And he's an athletic unicorn. He's in that same athletic tier as Lamar. Now, Lamar's a much more gifted natural thrower of the football. The Louisville stuff played out. We saw it. I don't know how the league didn't see it, but nonetheless, he's more advanced. He was more advanced coming into the league. But Jalen has got a real, I mean, the arm is real. He can really drive the football, and he's willing to sit in and be a thrower. He is not a helter-skelter guy, sometimes to his detriment. I do think this is a skill, and I know you would agree with me on this, knowing when to apply the feet. Like that, we need this 3rd-and-7, man. I don't care if you find that backside dig because they have left you a void to just create that first down with your legs on 3rd-and-7. Just take it. Just take that. You know what I mean? There's some of that with him, but if you can be patient, you can put the right quarterback run game plus one plan in front of him that changes the scope of how defense is played, and then sort of work in more of those NFL downfield 1-2-3 concepts, there can be something here. I do find myself very fascinated with that player. I do find it interesting if anybody, the other teams in this thing want to jump in front of them, et cetera, et cetera. That's where I'm like thinking the Browns don't want to go up to 15, 21, 24. I think it's like 29 is the earliest I would expect them to start poking at the Commanders. But you know, Philly, Andrew Berry's got a great relationship with the Philly front office, having worked there, been there. Maybe they're going up a pick to get the 5th year, sort of again, identical to some of what Baltimore was able to do with getting Lamar at the end of the first round too. So, that's where I'm just drawn to that idea, because if I don't love the traits of the others, why don't I chase a 2nd round pick worth of traits? It's just a fun gamble to make. And I think, again, so much to like about the player. And also recognize that the basement can be low. It could fall out. But the player is so fun, and it would just be like, if he gets to 80% of what he could be, that's a really good football player, Ken. It's a really good football player and a dynamic weapon in a plus one run game scenario. And you know better than anybody how hard that can be to defend, at least not just straight defending the play, but preparing for it. Yeah. That is so challenging.
Yeah, definitely drives the defensive coordinators nuts to have to teach their – reteach in a lot of cases their defensive players the assignment football necessary to stop it. And Milroe may or may not be a guy who reads leverage the way that Lamar does, because that's one of the things. You go after the running back and leave Lamar out, even if the appropriate guy is in the appropriate space, he may not make the appropriate tackle. And you've got that as a possibility. But I did see Jeremiah, I think, was the one who said Milroe had the highest upside of any player in this draft.
I get it. It's the same thing that people were saying about Lamar, but everybody was scared back then because it was a more top-heavy quarterback draft. And it's like, well, we see Lamar, we know what he could be, and we do recognize the ceiling, but the basement's lower. I just don't care so much anymore, especially when I'm getting into that range of like 33 to jump up. I want to chase, you know, if you're ever going to be serious about this conference or the division because of, you know, what you guys are doing and what Cincinnati is doing, like, I need to chase that. I do, and I'm interested in that spot. You know, 2nd pick in the draft, different discussion, right? Totally different. But when you're in 33, that's a spot where I'm like, okay, this is a spot we can take a calculated risk here, because if it pans out, we got something here. And you just don't find these guys every year.
I mean, trading out of 2 would seem to be an option that the Browns would poke and prod at to great degree, because a lot of people are saying defer for a year their draft capital if you possibly could do it. It's just there's no way to trade into 26 and guarantee that you're getting the same kind of capital. And I don't think that Travis Hunter, I mean, if it were a quarterback, if there were 2 quarterbacks That Manning and Rivers, you know, were available right. in the same draft, then I think it'd be another matter of there'd be a bidder. But that's just not the case this year. It's
nobody's calling. From everything you hear, man, there's like just a lack of desire. I mean, there are people that would be interested in but you're not. The reason you get out of two is because you're getting that tax, that quarterback tax that teams have to pay to come up, and there's just not. So I don't think there's that big of an appeal to do it. And I think some teams are sort of sitting there saying, well, let's see if the Browns actually have the stomach to make that pick and make that take it. I mean, because there's a little bit of risk you do take with Travis. There is some unknown there.
Yeah. All right. So the last thing is one thing we talked about as a hypothetical on your show is the possibility of the Browns trading back into the first round. You mentioned that you thought the highest they might go is 28, 29 kind of thing, but the Ravens are sitting there at 27 and, I think the pick could well be for sale. So we can look at it two different ways. The first is, would it be 33 and what else would be going for it? And we could figure that out pretty easily from JJ charts. I think the more interesting question is the hypothetical that would the Browns be interested in moving back into the first round in exchange for their 2026 number one?
I think they would probably say a spot like, it's hard, Ken. Like 15 to 21 would probably be where they'd want to go to do that. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that I would hope, this is my opinion, I am not obviously voicing the Browns' opinion, but like, I don't have faith that they're going to be a playoff team next year. And if you're flirting with a situation where there is very realistic here that Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco are sharing 17 starts in your season, I cannot move off any future stuff. Like future meaningful stuff, just because if you pair that, what I'm pointing out to you, which is, your risk factor, your variable of outcomes here is like wide. It's very wide. You would have to be moving into a world where you're getting a quarterback that you really love. I think like JJ McCarthy last year, even Penix, right? It just doesn't feel like there's that connective tissue. So you don't find yourself in that world believable yet, and it's just hard to do that. It's hard to believe in that in the way that you need to believe in it to make that move. So I don't think they would want to do. And on top of like, hey man, we punted on three straight years of ones, and like I understand you are getting a second one, so you're not really over the course of like laying it out year to year losing one, but it is like they need to keep the ball rolling with this a little bit. But I mean, Ken, nothing's impossible. They could love somebody and be interested in doing that sort of thing, but I just don't get that. I just don't get that vibe here. What are we, 7 days out now, 6 days out, five? I don't know anymore. But yeah, I don't think that's what they. But I do think that they could be interested in like the second hypothetical of like 27 and 33. You're probably talking about, I don't know, the chart in front of you or me or whatever. It's probably maybe 94 and 104, something like that. I'm not sure, but that is a spot that I think if they think a team is, hey, there's a real connection between the Commanders front office and the Giants front office that they're going to jump to 29. Well, how do we get in front of 29? Will we get to 27? That's where I think that could happen. And I think that it's just a matter of if the Ravens are willing to hear him out on it, because I think they could call. If they love Milroe or Sanders, they could want to get up there and do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think all it would take is 94. If you're just looking at the JJ point values, because it'd be like a 100-point difference in JJ for 124 is what the 94th pick is worth. But the problem is that the JJ point chart was developed before the fifth-year option entered the league's lexicon. And so it's now a very significant factor, and it doesn't account for that drop-off in value that goes to 33. Although, boy, do I love having the 33 pick on that first night of the draft for the possibility of trading it again entering day two.
100%. So. People get very, very interested. That's the spot where people are chomping at the bit, man. It's a good place to be. But I also understand if they do. And listen, the Tommy Rees offensive coordinator with Jalen, if I had to predict it, I think they're going Hunter Milroe. I don't know where they get Milroe, but I feel like that's where we're going. If they don't get Milroe, maybe someone sneaks in, takes him, sweeps in, or they don't have as much conviction as I thought. I do think they're looking at offensive tackle for which one of those, maybe the Connerly or the Simmons or the Donovan Jacksons that fall out of the first. I do think they want some youth and talent as a backup plan at offensive tackle that they would like to entertain if they can entertain that, because they go quarterback in the second round. But I think they're going to be a like you know, 67 is the earliest at running back, probably looking more realistically at 94, 104 at that spot for them, because they just feel like, it feels like to me, they know they need some other things ahead of that. And it's just the draft class is aligned to have some talented guys there.
Well, Browns fans deserve to have some good things to look forward to. I know you got a new stadium. Groundbreaking. When is that going to be open in all likelihood?
And in true Cleveland fashion, Ken, this is not going to be easy. So the state just locked in. Well, let me put it this way. The representatives in the state locked in the $600 million that it would take. Browns are supposed to be borrowing this, paying it back through collection of parking, et cetera, et cetera. So that's locked in, but it has to go now to the Senate and then ultimately signed off by a governor who's been pretty vocally against it. So we'll see. I think, listen, the situation here with the Haslams, they wouldn't go this far unless they knew they could get it done. They're going to get it done. The question is just like if something out of left field happens to stop it. Now there is, and again, this is connected, so maybe your fans do care, and it's just at least a side note interesting thing. The when the Browns left initially and headed your way, the city enacted what's called the Modell Law, which meant that they could not move. This team kept everything inside. They kept the history, all of that, but they could not, the Browns could not be moved out of Cleveland. Was the theory here. They could not, that is locked history for Cleveland. Now they're moving to the suburbs. They're moving closer to Berea, which is about 15 minutes from downtown. And with that move, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening in Cleveland courts about if that is a viable thing to do, because you're technically not in the downtown limits anymore. But you know, this is all kind of over my pay grade, but this is the stuff we're kind of side eyeing.
And this, the key factor here, which I think I asked you before, but I forget what the answer is what tax authority does, is it the same taxes authority that covers Brook Park is in the same county as Cleveland is? Because Baltimore City is not part of any county. It's separate. And so Baltimore County, that's a big deal if they would move to Baltimore County. It's a different.
Yeah, I think it's in the same county. So I think that's where the Browns are of the belief that this is fine. But don't quote me on that. Let me actually look that up right now.
so Cuyahoga County, right?
Yeah, I think it's in Cuyahoga County. But I want to make sure, so I'm not telling your folks that it's wrong. So it is in Cuyahoga County. So that is probably why the Browns feel good about it, because it maintains the Cuyahoga, and that's their argument. But the mayor of Cleveland and others are arguing that, hey, man, this is enacted and basically saying you can't leave the city limits, and that's where it's getting spicy. Ultimately, look, people with money like this, it's going to happen. It's going to be a really beautiful dome stadium. It's going to feel like outer space in this division ultimately, but it's going to be a really beautiful stadium with a really beautiful build around it. But that doesn't mean it's not going to upset nostalgic Browns fans who are used to watching football in the freezing cold and all that stuff. But, you know, if you win some games, Ken, nobody ultimately cares as much as they used to, because they just want to see these guys win. They're hungry for a winner and kind of getting punched in the stomach more often than not, you know.
So the Bills fans are eagerly to continue their frigid outside existence without a roof. And you know, we went up there for the playoff game, of course, and it was a miserable night for us for a lot of reasons. I mean, that you're playing familiar with, but we sat in the club section, and I'll say that it's an outdoor club, but you're broiled in some heat lamps from overhead. That's just, it actually is no problem at all.
Wow.
The rest of the stadium, frozen tundra.
It's a choice. I mean, I get it. I certainly would have understood the Browns redoing their current state, but the stadium needed some stuff that was really shaky. They built that thing so hastily when they got the team back, and it just wasn't well thought out locationally. And I understand that people like the tie to the location. They grew up, their parents took them to ball games in that area. You know, all I get it, but it's got a chance to be really beautiful. It's got a chance to feel like you're in a different world when you're there. And I do think that one of the better modern day things with these domes and the way they're trying to build this, which is similar, they're having the same architecture group that did the Minnesota Stadium, is very much built toward creating really hard crowd noise to deal with, a whole single side section that runs bottom to top. Yeah. They want to build that in a way that it's like very glass structured, so the sunlight comes in, you feel like you're outside, but it's very centered on creating havoc with the crowd noise. And I think that ultimately can be just as disruptive as your fingertips being pretty cold too. So we'll see.
I'll say that the stadiums in Indianapolis and in Minnesota are two of the really uncomfortable places for me to be inside of. I'm a photosensitive guy. Yeah. And that light coming through glass is just one of the most miserable feelings.
I haven't experienced it. I you told me that before. I am curious to see what it's like and if it does bother me in the same way, because that is that's a weird experience to feel like you're outdoors in the sense of the light that's hitting you. But yeah, you're indoor. Yeah, the total juxtaposition of all that will be very interesting. So you'll come over this way, I'm sure, and see it for yourself.
We'll do. Jake, outstanding. Always great having you on. Where can folks find your work online?
Yep, just brownsfilmbreakdown.com. We're gonna hopefully someday down the line, I don't know when, but hopefully maybe get some more of the division teams in this film study world we're doing. So find me there, and then at Jake_Burns18 on Twitter as well. Just try to have good, healthy football conversations as often as we can. So always appreciate the banter.
All right. Other folks out there, please check in on draft night. We'll have 17 hours of continuous streaming going on for all three nights of the draft. Hopefully have a few guests from other divisions. I'll talk to Jake about that after that, if he's got time during his very, very busy schedule to come and join us for an hour or something to watch the draft from our perspective. But we'd love to have you for that. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Likewise. Thanks, Ken, for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.